Today on Maine Calling, American Sign Language. During the pandemic, the Maine CDC daily briefings became a big part of many people's lives. Through those briefings, Dr. Nirav Shah emerged as a bit of a celebrity in Maine. And so did the interpreters who translated many of the briefings into American Sign Language. Sign language is critical for communication for many deaf people. It has a fascinating history, and it continues to evolve. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn more about how ASL works and what's often misunderstood about this form of communication. We'll meet two of the interpreters who are among those in Maine in high demand. Their expertise is in short supply. And we'll also find out where to learn ASL in Maine. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Like all languages, sign language came about by necessity, has many different variations, and changes constantly with the times. Today, we will discuss how people convey meaning through sign language and learn about sign language interpretation. This show is part of the Maine Calling series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. We are streaming it live on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Calling's Facebook page. Our ASL English interpreter for this show is Sid Pollard. Our guest today, Dr. Regan Thibodeau. She is part-time faculty of American Sign Language and English Interpreting at the University of Southern Maine. Sid Pollard will be providing voice interpretation for Dr. Thibodeau during the program. And with us, Byron Oakes, a freelance ASL interpreter who owns Bridge the Gap Maine. He is CODA, or a child of deaf adults, and is the former president of the Northern Maine Deaf Club. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have questions about how sign language works? Would you like to learn it? You can send an email, a brief email, please, to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for being here today. Regan, I'll start with you, Dr. Thibodeau. I recently learned, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this, that American Sign Language and British Sign Language are two completely different languages. It is not as though there are two versions of English. Why is that? How did American Sign Language develop?
Oh, good morning. It's a wonderful story about that. I love talking about how it came to be. First of all, I want to ask, do you know how many signed languages there are globally?
I don't know exactly, but I suspect it's going to be a much bigger number than any of us would imagine.
It is. So there are 3,600 spoken languages, roughly, globally. And there are approximately 600 signed languages.
Wow.
Some are still not formally recognized. I recently was in Peru, and we went up to the Peruvian Congress to help them. We did a campaign to help them recognize that the Peruvian deaf folks had a formal sign language, but it was not established. Getting that language recognized allowed them to be able to establish schools and other services. So that was recognized a few years ago. And we see this globally with deaf education and signed languages. If we think way back to Aristotle, which many folks know, but he had a different view of deaf people, and they didn't necessarily view disabilities in the same way that we may today. So in 380 BC, he made a statement saying that deaf people could not learn because they could not hear, and that meant they could not think. And that stigma and philosophy impacted access for deaf individuals because no one challenged it at the time. And then in the 16th century, there was Ponce de Leon. And he was a conqueror and explorer. But in 1600, he thought that he could challenge that idea because he was a monk. And there was a lot of times when you would not use spoken language in your practice. And so they used visual gestures to impact and communicate with other monks. And so he wanted to provide this philosophy to rich individuals and thinking about generational inheritance of land, how could they have educated deaf people in order to be able to inherit the land? So Ponce de Leon tried working with them and it was successful. But there was a lot of time that visual language was not accessible. But deaf people are very creative and everyone wants to find a way to communicate. And so that's why there is diversity globally for all of these visual languages. And so when we think about American Sign Language, of course we think, oh, British Sign Language, we're both English speakers. Wouldn't it be great to be connected? But really, our roots for American Sign Language come from France. And there was French Sign Language. And in 1760, there was a school for deaf individuals in Paris. And they were thriving. They were able to work on newspapers, good spellers, attention to detail, all of that. And so someone from the United States, Gallaudet, went to Europe looking for opportunities on how to educate deaf individuals, found an expert from France, and brought him back to the United States in 1817 to set up a school for the deaf in Connecticut. And so at that time, there were signed languages in the United States by Native Americans. They had, in the 1500s, there are some documentation and pieces of those signed communication. And we know that there were a lot of different religious folks in Europe that were following, those ideas, and they moved to the United States. So in Martha's Vineyard in the 1700s, there were also visual languages. So Martha's Vineyard had a visual language. Mr. Lambert came. You had the natives who were also using it. And then, as having Abbe brought over by Gallaudet, setting up another visual language in the school. So there was a lot of movement in that respect. So, thinking that there would be one universal language would be great. There's so much that we don't understand about how languages work, and we're still learning, but people always want to connect and find a way to have a shared language. So, feel free to always connect with your folks and sign and, thinking about, want those connections everywhere with your neighbor, cooking, fixing your car and baking cookies.
And just to be clear, when you say visual language, you mean what most of us say is sign language, but maybe even a little broader than that.
Yes. So, for example, thinking about the monks, they had a hand system in order to spell with other monks. Even now, when you meet other individuals who are from other countries or whatever, there are some gestures that we use in order to navigate. You don't have to have the same language, but being human, we have shared experiences so that we can see some different things. Now, recognize, I do want to acknowledge there is a deaf-blind population, and they experience the world through touch, and that connects to their communication. So you can also have communication with other individuals who have different senses that are their primary way of engaging with the world. But we use language for education, connection, professional needs, and on for the purposes of that. So we use interpreters to reduce that misunderstanding, and because those misunderstandings can have negative consequences for those who have to utilize interpreters, and we want to make sure that the interpreters are qualified in order to not negatively impact those connections.
Byron, when you work as an interpreter, Explain how you are thinking about language. Are you interpreting each sentence word for word, or are you conveying the meaning of the sentence in a different way?
That's a really great question, Jennifer. I would have to say it starts with building scheme or schema. Getting as much information as you can prior to the assignment gives you more context, and that makes the process of interpreting a lot easier. It is not word for word. It's a range. There's some people that prefer signed English. Other people prefer all the way ASL. There's a range. So it kind of depends upon the person using the service. But yeah, generally it's more conceptually, what is the point? And then when it's word for word, like frozen text, then we start breaking down some of the English idioms and barriers that are in the way between ASL and English. That's a whole different conversation.
And I imagine it's especially challenging when you are doing ASL interpretation for something that's very specific. Like, I know Reagan did a lot during the pandemic that was medical terminology. So there's a layer, I'm guessing, and tell me if this is true, Byron, that there is everyday language, and then there's there are times in which it's particularly challenging.
Yes. And I will say, as an interpreter, a lot of my times that I in medical settings, I'll find myself bumping into doctors or providers, and them ask me, hey, did you see that interpreter on the screen? And, you know, I always say, yeah, of course, because I always like to plug in and stay involved in what's going on. The assumption that deaf people can just read closed captioning and that's good enough access is not a narrative that I support. I believe that people have the right to receive the information any way they seem appropriate. And a lot of the times I have to squash out fires, you know, and say, you know, yes, this interpreter on screen is expressive. Some have argued that they're distracting. But when you're getting into expression, that represents tone, urgency. And some of the times that people see interpreters on the screen, it's not 24/7, sadly. I wish it was. But normally it's high register events, catastrophic, urgent things that people need to know about. And in order to really emphasize that in sign language, it really comes off as really intense body language.
I understand that. People come to be fluent. Oh, yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Thibodeau.
All right. So I just wanted to piggyback on what Byron was saying. A couple other components that people don't always realize is that one part of American Sign Language, well, 80% of the language is not what you see on the hands. It's not the actual signs. It's shoulder shift, positioning of the body, the conversation that happens, facial expressions, and that leads to the other aspect of culture. And it's not a linear sign. That's often what you hear with words. There's other things that are there, and it's an experience of how one views and lives in the world. So how we choose our vocabulary and talk about things is, you know, we think about that aspect of language, but we also have a cultural aspect as deaf individuals. Having a deaf person on the screen in those instances also thinks about the culture, the fact that how they experience the world. So that 80% of, you know, without, when you read English, you don't have that tone. It's very flat. How do we know the full meaning just by reading the English? We wouldn't necessarily know that. And that's just part of having that language. And that's something that I see all the time. And particularly during that pandemic, I had folks, reach out to me and share that, you know, the impact of having to wear masks during COVID, and they, you know, the fact that they were being judged for being hard of hearing, and it was really challenging because they relied so much and they appreciated having that interpretation because it gave context, even for those individuals who don't necessarily use American Sign Language to communicate, but they have that awareness of body language that, and it reinforced or supported their understanding of what was going on in addition to the captions that they were reading. And so I think that, if people realized how much of the language really is facial expressions, body grammar, and so on, they would realize it's not meant to be a distraction, but it's actually, there's meaning behind it.
I understand that people who can speak ASL or sign ASL come to ASL for many different reasons, and I'm wondering if each of you would be willing to share your story. Dr. Thibodeau, how did you come to learn American Sign Language?
So I am one of the, I guess, stories in the sense of the doctors early on had a thought that sign language was not a fit for me. And what I call that is that phonocentrism, sound focused. So going back to Aristotle, back in 380, there is the belief that if you can't hear, your lives are less than that phonocentrism, giving that priority to the ability to hear. So ableism, audism. So there may be some ideas there. And audism is prioritizing that quality of sound. So we see
Can
that.
I
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
interrupt?
Jennifer.
Yeah, I just want to say, so is what you're saying, Regan, is that you were born deaf and because you couldn't hear, the doctors thought you could not learn sign language?
Well, it's not that they thought that I couldn't, they thought I should not. They thought that by giving that access, I might not work to listen. They wanted me to assimilate or become as hearing as possible and to prioritize that, to keep that visual language in the background. For your listeners, in the sense of like the more language you give to a child, whether it's visual or auditory language, that is the best thing you can do for a person. And so various situations. But the doctors had this idea of wanting to not have me sign, but rather use my voice. And at 6.5 years old, I finally had exposure to sign language. It was here in Maine. And once I was exposed to that, that gave me such an opportunity. So I also had speech therapy. I was able to do some speaking, but it wasn't until I had my ASL that I was allowed to thrive. And I saw my teacher just last Saturday, and it was the first teacher I met at the school when I was enrolled there. And so I was so grateful that they did not give up on me, even though I was 6.5. And so, we are still seeing this challenge today, this errant thinking that says, no, they'll never learn to listen. They'll never learn to read and write English. Don't sign with them. But that early exposure to language is the gateway to learn other languages. And so, when I think for, in my history, they never thought that I could go on to have college, and they wouldn't let me have interpreters when I was in school early on because of this idea that I needed to be, quote, as hearing as possible. But when I finally had access to an interpreter, I understood what was happening. And now I have a PhD. I am the first Mainer who is deaf to get a PhD here. And at the time when I got it, there was only 400 deaf individuals to get a PhD. So it really was a big deal, but it shows evidence of how much that phonocentrism governs our lives and the quality of life so much because we prioritize sound. So that's, finding that was so wonderful to be able to counter the doctor's opinion.
And when you say you were 6.5 and at school, are you talking about the Baxter School?
Yeah.
Byron, I want to hear your story, how you learned American Sign Language, but I have to take a break. So we're going to hear that after the break. This is Maine Calling, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're learning about sign language. With me, Byron Oakes, an ASL interpreter who is the child of deaf adults, or CODA, and founder of Bridge the Gap Maine. And Dr. Regan Thibodeau, who teaches American Sign Language and English interpreting at the University of Southern Maine and has worked extensively as an interpreter. The voice you hear for Regan is that of Sid Pollard, who is serving as the ASL English interpreter for today's program. We are streaming this on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Calling's Facebook page, so you can see everybody we're talking about by going to one of those. Share your comments and questions. What do you want to know about American Sign Language? Do you want to learn it? You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. But before we go to our audience questions, Byron, I do want to hear your story. When and how did you learn American Sign Language?
Sure. So I was born before the American Disabilities Act, not to date myself. So both my parents are deaf, both graduates of Baxter School for the Deaf. And I'm the first child, of our family. I grew up in rural Maine, about 40 minutes from the Bangor area. And, I had unique privilege of kind of living in a bubble where in my home, everyone signed. When the phone rang, it was a family line. We had a big 300-pound TTY machine that sent signals to one another, to another machine, so that people could communicate to one another. And when like TTY services hadn't quite caught up at that point, I was interpreting insurance claims, loans for banks. My own IEP, and I'm sure my educators are cringing hearing me talk today. But imagine being a middle schooler, not doing great in school, and them thinking, "Well, the kids' education is falling at the seams, so we need to call a meeting, but we don't value it enough to hire an interpreter. Let's just have the kid tell his parents how bad he's doing, and see how that goes." A lot has come along since the 1980s, I will say that. But I learned it because it was a necessity. In order to be with my family and to be included, I needed to learn sign language. And then when I went out of my home, I had a whole new set of rules and expectations that the hearing world had for me. And kind of navigating both worlds was quite a challenge. And it's still today a challenge for many CODAs, children of deaf adults. People just have a lot of assumptions about the deaf community, and a lot of things that Regan has already mentioned in regards to philosophers and other people of setting a precedent of thinking that deaf can't. My family is a success story of how it can. Blue hardworking Americans paid their taxes just like everyone else. They just couldn't get on the same access as everyone else.
Byron, it sounds to me as though you feel a great responsibility towards the deaf community.
Sadly, you'll find a lot of stats online on Maine.gov with the latest NV report. Did a survey around the state looking at some of the glaring needs of our state. And something I've been screaming for 15 years in northern Maine is we don't have interpreters. In Portland, or in southern Maine areas, the interpreter climate, or what people talk about, is greatly different than what we talk about in rural areas. We're talking about equal access, right? Two people applying for the same job in two different locations could be the difference of getting an interpreter in one day and an interpreter in 6 weeks. Now, to a hearing business, who are they going to hire? So, yeah, I feel like there's a civic responsibility to kind of make it known that without resources, needs aren't met. So yeah, I hope that this is an opportunity for my neighbors, my loved ones, even my family members that haven't learned to sign yet, to take an opportunity to pick up sign language and make everyone feel included.
One thing I was thinking about, Byron, as you were talking about your childhood, is that it seems similar to the children of many immigrants who come to this language speaking a different language and end up doing things like translating medical appointments and things like that for their parents. But I also know that in those families, there's tension sometimes about which language to speak when, not losing the language of your forebears. I mean, are there those kinds of conversations in families like yours?
That's great. That's a great question. A lot of the times, a lot of my signing friends will say this of me. I refuse to talk in public when I'm out in a restaurant with other signing friends. I try to make life as non-sounding as possible, only for the simple fact that I want to be a friendly bridge for the next interaction with someone. If another deaf person comes in, I want that waitress to have or waiter to have self-esteem enough to be like, okay, we are on two totally different communication modes right now, modalities. How do we get on the same page? And generally with restaurants and stuff like that, it's pretty simple. We all have the same schema. When we go into a restaurant, we know we wait to get sit, right? We know that when the waitress or waiter comes up, they're going to hand us a glass of water. There's these simple routines that are in play that if we know what this schematic approach is, the picking up of the signs are relatively easy. It's when you want to learn word for word for word that linguists, or people that are like Rosetta Stone focused really start to struggle when it comes to assigned language.
I'm going to go to Christopher, who's calling from Booth Bay Harbor. Hi, Christopher, go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to chime in first with that last point you made. Growing up in Western Massachusetts, I was surrounded by a multitude of non-English speaking individuals from any and every country you can think around the world. And as a kid and as a teenager, I grew up with the mentality of most of, my other friends and what have you saying, "Hey, speak English, speak English." Whereas now, as an adult, having been where I've been and seen what I've seen, I understand it from the other side. That to include sign language. As a kid in the 70s and the 80s in Massachusetts, I paid it no mind until, as a teenager working for a blue light special guy, when I got a customer that would come to me and, deaf, and I couldn't understand what they were saying, I was so thankful that there was someone there to interpret via sign language. Flashing forward, my 17-year-old daughter now is self-taught sign language about 4 or 5 years ago, just prior to, or maybe it was 6 years ago, prior to the pandemic. And it's a breath of fresh air, number one, to see all the signers there, with the pandemic briefings and all that. But more so when my daughter has choir performances, so on and so forth, she is the one out there in the front signing. And it's amazing to see how many people, from kids, teenagers, adults, grandparents, that come up to her and thank her ever so much for her efforts in putting forth that sign language. It means the world to so many people in bridging that gap, as you say. So
Christopher,
thank you ever so much for putting on this show.
how did your daughter learn sign language?
Like
And also,
my daughter.
did you raise her in Booth Bay Harbor?
Okay, so I am security and chauffeur. My wife is the one that raised her and taught her. My wife is a former school teacher. My daughter has been and is an empath all her life. When she sees something that interests her, she picks it up immediately and just goes to it. She learned to sign in a matter of 10 days.
Did she go online to learn? Did she take classes with
Yes.
a teacher?
No, online and books.
Wow. Okay. Christopher, thank you for that. Regan, you teach USM at USM. I want to ask you about the opportunities for people to learn American Sign Language. You heard about his daughter who taught herself. Are there classes available all over the state of Maine? Is University of Southern Maine the only place? What can you tell us?
A wonderful question. Of course, we want everyone to have the opportunity to learn American Sign Language, particularly for deaf individuals. We don't want to practice autism by teaching baby signs to individuals who can hear and then withhold it from our deaf and hard of hearing babies. Everyone can learn American Sign Language. So I want to emphasize that point. But it's wonderful. At USM, we do have lots of students who come in and take classes. And during COVID, during the pandemic, we really went remote in so many ways. And I'd have to say the pace and the ability kind of suffered in the language because I've been teaching for 28 years. So I've seen through the years, and that hit at the 20, essentially the 25th year. And I, when we came back offline, people thought that they knew how to sign because they, again, had just the signs. They didn't have appropriate grammatical markers. They didn't have time references, which is shown by body movement. And so I was having to fill in a lot of those gaps and teach a lot of the language that was missing from what they were learning online. So of course, I am a little bit thinking, if you're only going to do it, don't only do it online. You can learn online, but it is a language which requires interaction. You need to have pragmatics. You need to be able to talk. You need that three-dimensional movement that is expressed that you can't do on a screen. And so, as Byron mentioned, there's the diversity within your users and people who are using that language. So you want to learn from a deaf individual and to do it. If you're really serious about learning the language, do it in person if you can. But certainly, building your vocabulary, as Byron was talking about the Rosetta Stone, where it's word for word. That's fine for some vocabulary, but it's not the full language as what you get when you interact with those who use the language. So, of course, I'm going to promo that everyone should come to USM, but UMO also used to have an ASL class, and there are other places, but we do see that enrollment fluctuates. And so then that impacts the needs of professors and teachers, so if there's demand for it, then it will grow those opportunities across the state. And you want to have your deaf native users teaching the signs. So we would love to have all of you learn American Sign Language. But we have an interpreting program at USM, which is the only one in Maine.
And I think on this very topic, I'm going to go to Lila, who's calling from Warren. Hi, Lila, go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer. I just wanted to do a shout out. Sadly, Maine lost one of the most beloved teachers of ASL this past August when Sherry Walrath passed away. Sherry taught ASL at UMaine Farmington for over 20 years. And not only did she teach at the university, she was always available for any interpreting jobs. And we all know how rural it is up there in the mountains. And she would travel any distance to be supportive, whether someone was working and needed an interpreter to work with students or medical or even legal kinds of opportunities. And so there are many people, I'm sure, listening to the program who, if you didn't have Sherry as a teacher, she was a mentor for you. And not only did she teach at the school, she would work with the students to do theater, always incorporating sign language. And so we miss her greatly, and she was a huge influence. And frankly, the state of Maine needs a lot more interpreters. Reagan could speak to this, but my understanding is there are less than 20 certified interpreters who have to travel around the entire state.
Lila,
Thank you
you
for taking my
already
call.
you beat me to one of my big questions for this program. Thank you so much. But Byron, the whole time that Lila was talking about Sherry, you were nodding. This is someone you know.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in rural Maine, there's not many interpreters, there's not many resources, and you find that you have to support each other in order to do what's in the best interest of the user. And yeah, I as a northern Maine rural interpreter, I'm averaging about 1,800 miles a week. That's standard practice for our state. I really wish we had more interpreters, more qualified interpreters. But the reality is, over the last few years after the recent law, we went from having interpreters come into our state to not really having any at all.
What do you
And
mean
it's
about the recent law?
Well, legislation changed. It went from a 100-100 rule in order to become licensed in our state, which is 100 hours of working with a certified interpreter and 100 hours of formalized education. Now, in no way, means, shape, or form am I saying that should be the benchmark for what an interpreter, a qualified interpreter, should be in the state of Maine. But it was a way for a lot of deaf interpreters, CODAs, other native signers who may not have the resources or the financial backing to go to college to get into the field of work and be able to provide access to communication. On top of working with different organizations to teach ASL, there are a few adult education places. I believe Bangor has a deaf teacher, as well as Belfast. There are other more affordable ways to get in and get your foot in and get a taste of what the culture is like. And I challenge everyone that wants to learn more to come visit me at Deaf Night Out, which we can give you some links through the Maine Association of the Deaf webpage, but to social and really integrate yourself and immerse yourself in the deaf community is, I think, the best way to really improve your skill. And in fact, I would not be licensed today if it wasn't for the deaf community.
And Byron, I just want to go back to the law for just a second. You said it used to be 100 hours of practice and 100 hour of class. What is it now? Do you have to have some sort of degree?
4-year degree, minimum.
Okay. Okay. We do need to go to another break. What are your questions about sign language generally or American Sign Language specifically or interpreting? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Or if you're quick, you can send a quick email to talk@mainpublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you are listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, sign language. What are your questions? Joining me for the hour, Dr. Regan Thibodeau, who teaches ASL English Interpreting at the University of Southern Maine. Sid Pollard, who is serving as the ASL interpreter for the live stream of today's program and is voicing for Regan, and Byron Oakes, a freelance ASL interpreter and former president of the Northern Maine Deaf Club. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We are streaming this program on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Public's Facebook page. And this is part of our year-long series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. So many emails coming in. I'll go to this one from Bruce. So many people have hearing deficiencies, even if they are not considered technically deaf. I grew up with a great aunt who was completely deaf from either birth or an early age. In the late 60s, we kids were given alphabet cards so we could learn the basic alphabet and sign. We were all pretty handy at communicating with Aunt Dorothy. She never got implants but lived a good long life in her own house. During my life, I have been able to use that simple alphabet occasionally. I think all kids should be taught at least some basic sign language. And Dr. Thibodeau, what do you think? Do you think all children need to be taught some basic signs?
Yes, to answer quickly, but I think about when we're talking about the framing of disability, we're all disabled in one way or another because as babies, we rely on others. And as we get older, we have changes in our, it's a natural part of life. We're all on some aspect of the spectrum, you know, some are temporary, some are lifelong, and it impacts the way that we live. So all children should learn some sign language because often we can use that visual language better than we can speak. And if everyone who was in our golden years of life, of retirement as senior citizens, if we knew that visual language, we have our backup plan because so many people lose that sense as they get older. And they can, you know, children could communicate with their grandparents. You know, we call that deaf gain, the contribution that the deaf community has given to everyone. And we go about things in life every day. And sign language is one way to improve the quality of life. So I feel like, yes, it would be great if all schools could do that. But another example of deaf gain is the visual aspects. You know, Thomas Edison himself had a hearing difference. He was hard of hearing and wanted to be able to communicate when things became dark. So he invented the light bulb. You know, things that we all benefit from as humans. You know, we do things to, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so, you know, a deaf person invented the football huddle. You know, Charlie Chaplin was mentored by his deaf friend in order to have great silent movies. Rearview mirrors invented by deaf individuals. So things that we talk about as disabilities really enhance life if we recognize our differences and try to address them. I think all children should learn sign language because they can have that early communication with their parents. It'd be great.
We'll go to Sarah calling from Topsom. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a retired speech and language pathologist, and I'd always been interested in sign language and ever since I was a kid. And I lived in the Boston area as an adult, and there was a lot of classes that I could take. And then I was working at schools, and I worked with a little girl who was deaf, and I worked with her for about 8 years. And she had a deaf education teacher, which I guess is pretty unusual. You know, and also an interpreter. But I learned so much more about the language, and the more I learned, the more I realized I didn't know. But in the meantime, I adopted a dog who was born blind and deaf, and I started communicating with her by applying signs on her body. And she was a therapy dog at the school, so all the kids learned to apply signs also, and they all had named signs. And they learned, a lot of the kids I worked with had special needs, and they learned through my dog, you know, how resilient she was and that she just had a different way of learning. So that was sort of my experience with sign language, but I think it's an amazing language and I wish I knew more. I did take one program at Baxter. It was an intensive weekend program, and we had to turn our voices off when we wound up there Friday, and then we could talk at the end of the day Sunday. But it was baptism by fire for me because I wasn't that proficient. People were really patient with me, and I learned so much more having been immersed in it. And that's
well, Sarah, yeah, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. And what a fascinating experience with a dog. So we're not just talking about communicating human to human, but across species, really, human to dog. Byron, thoughts?
Yeah, me and my wife, we adopt deaf dogs. We have for 15 years now. And I'll have to say, a deaf dog at my house will know when a car pulls in before a hearing dog.
Why do you think?
Oh, why do you think?
They sense it in another way?
Exactly. Even though my floors are wooden, the way that the light shines and reflects off the windows, just that much more hypersensitive to that. If I had concrete floors, getting their attention would be a nightmare. So everything in my house acoustically and environmentally is appropriate to make sure I have nice wide spaces throughout the house. There's no walled off area, so everyone can see anything throughout the entire house. Deaf dogs are so loyal, they're so loving, and they're so intuitive.
That's so fascinating. Sarah, thank you for your call. We'll go to Portland and Bill. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to call and let your listeners know about a app that I recently discovered. I'm a big fan of Duolingo, and I've learned keeping up my Spanish and a couple other things on Duolingo. But I wish they had sign language. And then one day I found Lingvano. It's an app, L-I-N-G, V as in Victor, A-N-O, that allows you to learn sign language in your spare time. And I find it works really well.
Thank
the reason
you.
I got into it is because my partner has some hearing loss, and I'm afraid it may get worse over time.
Well, Bill, thank you for sharing that resource. Do either of you know about Lingvano?
Very, very little. The only, Rita might laugh at this, but the way I pick up new ASL science these days is going on to deaf logging sites that they have, like these Facebook groups where people are talking about different things.
That's fantastic. Yes.
Especially the raw stuff, stuff that, you know, you can't really hold your composure because that's when you get that full range of facial affect. I really love watching people talk to each other upset because it's beautiful linguistically.
Bill, thank you for your call. So much more to get to, so little time, but I know, Regan, you wanted to talk about something about the licensing for people to be considered an official interpreter who can be hired. We've talked a lot about how there's a need for more interpreters.
Yes, thank you. I do want to clarify a couple of pieces in this. There was a project that INAVI did do where they did a lot of research and got some information. And what we saw was a lot of college enrollment dropped nationwide. So it's really been tricky because when we think of the fact that the pandemic did have an impact across all professions, including interpreting, of bringing students in. So as the interpreter training program coordinator, seeing that enrollment go down, we're seeing less students come in. So that also has an impact on the number of interpreters entering the field as well. So that there are, that's a big factor. Now, the numbers that we do have in our program, they nearly all can go through the program and become licensed immediately. And so what we've seen over the last 3 years is that our graduates are getting their license and able to work for it. We're trying to transform the program in order to make a change. And I think part of that impact is, as a deaf interpreter myself and the collaboration that I have with the community, and Byron mentioned it too, you have to interact with individuals in the deaf community because you can't swim without water and you cannot learn language without the people that use it. And so, as Byron has mentioned, you know, we have ASL Club, we have opportunities, and you don't necessarily have to be a student at USM. Now, he mentioned Deaf Night Out. Those are some great conversational opportunities, getting your feet wet, also joining an ASL club. And again, you know, for those listeners who are interested in getting started. Now, when we talk about interpreting, we want to be protecting dangerous outcomes. And that's why we have a licensure process. You need a certain level when you're doing interpreting in order to, you know, for those, there are various pathways in order to become licensed and certified. So there are options. It's not always that you have to have a four-year degree.
At Byron.
Yeah, and I simply wasn't referring to the law itself as being the number one catalyst. It's more or less the issue that the people that are already users of the language don't necessarily have the additional resources to get that formalized education and get into the system. So we have a lot of people that receptively might understand the language. It might be almost there to go, but unless they go and commit $80,000 for a college education, they're not able to get in. Or like Regan said, the Pathways program, which includes an associate's degree, a two-year degree, and then proving all the years of work that you've done for an agency, if an agency hires you, and then the amount of volunteering time. It's all factored into some big computation sheet. But the reality is there's a stark need for interpreters throughout our state.
That's we are almost out of time, but I want to ask Yvonne's question. Yvonne sends an email that says, is there somewhere in Maine that will teach children ASL? So obviously the Baxter School, but you know, Maine's a large state. Byron, where else would you send people who want their children to learn ASL? And if you could answer in just a few seconds.
Absolutely. I sent a link already. Maine Associate or deafmaine.org will have a lot of these events and opportunities. They're very inclusive. They try to include every different organization's events there. That would be the best place to look throughout the state.
All right. Well, thank you both so much. What an interesting program. I've learned so much. Byron Oakes works as an ASL interpreter. Dr. Regan Thibodeau, faculty member at the University of Southern Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. We had help from Maine Public's television production coordinator, Nick Godfrey. And thank you to our ASL English interpreter, Sid Poller, with Mary Jane Grant Sign Language Interpreting Services. You can watch today's show on Maine Public's YouTube channel. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, best-selling author Simon Winchester and his new book, The Breath of Gods, all about wind. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.